This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 154 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stuffgill.
What's up, everybody? 154. We got a leader in the industry, wellness, Joe Miller.
Jill Miller's on the show, man.
Yeah, man.
Can't wait. First heard of her on two people I really respect. That's Jay Ferrugia and, of course, Joe DeFranco. They've had her on the podcast, on their podcast, and great messages. She's doing something a little bit different in terms of gut health with the different sort of those balls that she's got. So it's going to be interesting to see just exactly how we can apply it, because I was having a look at a site the other day. The actual balls are actually quite affordable. I think they were all under $30. So I'm actually going to buy one. From what Joe said, it works a treat for him.
Yeah, I know. Joe told the story to us when we were with him about how he did Jill's little workshop seminar. But like you said, she's been in the game for a while. So she, you know, the diaphragm specifically in regards to pain and living with pain. And we kind of get into that a little bit with this episode. I think everyone listening could relate to, you know, nothing's fun about living with pain, but if you could correlate or connect it to things that are in our control, and I think that's what Jill's really, her strengths are, giving us applicable ideas and tips and processes that if you do have pain, it could be managed without taking a pill, or it could be managed without going to a Western doctor and getting on some painkiller. We could do it holistically, and that's an important message.
No, it's going to be great to get on the show. It's great to connect the dots, especially with people who aren't inside our own circle. She comes highly recommended, so I can't wait to get Jill on the show. I think what she's doing is just something that's very authentic and very unique in the industry, so I'm really pleased to get her on.
Couldn't agree more.
Before we get Jill on, just a big shout-out to everyone subscribing to the show. Best thing if you can do for us, subscribe to the show, tell your friends, and leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Share the episodes. Tell all your friends about the Vision Board Podcast, Johnny and Tristan.
For sure. I can't say it any better. We agree on a lot of things today.
We got to.
All right, my man. Let's get Jill Miller on. All right, guys, our special guest is Jill Miller. She's the co-founder of Tune Up Fitness Worldwide and creator of corrective exercise format Yoga Tune Up and the Role Model Method. She's a pioneer with over 28 years of study in fitness, yoga, therapy, and anatomy. We welcome the incredible Jill Miller. Jill, welcome to the Vision Board Podcast.
Thank you. I feel like I'm talking to a stadium right now. I'm running through like to cheers. This is amazing. Thank you.
That's awesome, Jill. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about. Let's start with the Role Model Project. Could you share with us a little bit about what that is and who it's for?
Sure. The Role Model is actually the title of a book that I wrote a couple of years ago. The full title is The Role Model, a step-by-step guide to erase pain, improve mobility, and live better in your body. And it's spelled R-O-L-L, so it's a play on words. It doesn't translate well. In fact, it's being translated into Polish right now, and the title is completely uninteresting and unplayful. But really what the work is about is empowered self-massage. So I discovered, you know, many years ago, I'm 45, and I started dabbling in the world of massage, or let's say massage tools, when I was a teen. I remember having like little wooden rollers around my house and weird things for your feet and things for your spine. And I used self-massage when I was in my, gosh, my teens, my 20s, but I wasn't really injured. And I started studying massage when I was in college as well. I was in college full time, but I was fascinated by body therapy and was pulled into shiatsu, which is a form of Japanese pressure point massage. And what I came to learn and realize over the years was that self-massage, because that's just much more reliable in a classroom setting. I can't walk around and massage all of my students. Self-massage not only was soothing, and it helped light up people's proprioceptive awareness. It helped light up people's body maps and their sense of themselves, so that when I was teaching movement, if the movement sucked, which most of the time it does, and people didn't know how to find the muscles that I was trying to get them to activate, that using some tool like the role model balls, which are four different types of balls on tissues, could help improve that mapping of oneself and then therefore improve the physical performance of whatever it was you were working on, whether it was yoga or Pilates, strength and conditioning, athletics, or pain management.
Yeah, Jill, you mentioned the four different balls. Are these for four different areas of the body?
They could be. So there are four different sized balls. The smallest are called the yoga tuna balls, and they're just a little bit smaller than a tennis ball.
Yep.
The medium is called the plus. The larger of that set is called the alpha. And these are all dense, grippy, pliable rubber. So the therapy balls can fit and conform into different body areas. So, for example, our athletes, of course, because they're larger massed, tend to gravitate towards the alpha ball, but for their spine or for their feet or for their hands, the yoga tuna balls really are an ideal fit. All of the balls are made of a rubber that has a certain amount of squish and pliability. So the balls roll in and around bony prominences, and they conform to your shape rather than just pinching or bruising. And they can really get into the nooks and crannies that a foam roller bypasses or that a harder tool irritates. And then the last ball is a much larger ball that's called the Corgis ball, and it's air filled. And it also has a grippy skin that takes a hold of layers of tissue, meaning that all of these balls, when they grip and grab, help to excite some of the sensory neurons within your fascial tissues and provide that mapping. The Corgis ball, we use it primarily for the torso to help people to better map their breathing, improve their abdominal musculature health, and just lots and lots of novel ways of improving rib mobility, whole spine mobility, neck mobility. And there's a lot more to chew on around what it does for us with breathing and neurological rebalancing.
Jill, let's talk about pain. So is this, you know, it's interesting us as humans, a lot of my clients, you know, we just live with it and we get used to it. And it's one of these instances, it's not until maybe we go see a chiro or we go see an acupuncturist or a massage therapist and realize, holy crap, like I was living in pain, now I feel good. Was this something that you were living with? You said you didn't have injuries, but did you suffer from chronic pain, anything like that?
No, it's so interesting. I mean, I've definitely had my share of aches and pains and really annoying things over the years. But when I really look back at the inception of this work and why I was gravitating to doing self-massage as a ritualistic, I mean, I'm very disciplined about my workout practice. Mm-hmm. And I would find myself every single morning before I even left my dorm room during college doing certain routines of self-massage. And then I would go walk to the swim center and who knows what else I did. I danced. But for me, I had emotional pain. I was a bulimic in college. Actually, it started in high school. But prior to that, when I was 12, 13, I became anorexic. And I had total compulsive behaviors around food. I had total compulsive behaviors around exercise, hence the like intense discipline, right?
Yeah.
But really all of it was masking some of the emotional issues that I was running from, or I was burying, or I was, binging and purging so that I didn't have to actually feel those feelings. And the therapy balls put me into conditions of deep stress relief. They really gave me emotional regulation and helped me to tamp down the anxiety that was part of those addictive issues. And then it just so happened that it improved my ankle range of motion and I didn't have shoulder pain. And, you know, so there was this byproduct that, you know, we're all celebrating now. Like, we work with top athletes and we work with people in chronic pain, because the work works not just for self-soothing. Obviously, most people are attracted to this because it's going to improve their performance. But actually, the hidden little secret is that it's a much healthier way of modulating stress than taking a Xanax or having a six-pack every night or shutting down by watching, you know, nonsense television. But this is really a way of improving and upregulating your parasympathetics and creating more emotional resilience, as well as, of course, the physical benefits.
Jill, you mentioned, so I'm a coach. A lot of our fan base are young coaches, old coaches alike, dealing with clients on a day-in-day basis. You mentioned anorexia, and it's one of these things that, working at a health club, the conversation, I feel, with, you know, could be very difficult to have from coach to client.
Yes.
And it's a very, very important conversation to have. Could you kind of, like, help us out and share some insight or some advice if there's a coach out there and they feel one of their clients is struggling with this, how to approach that scenario?
Mm. Yeah, it's, you know, I've seen it too at my, you know, I've worked at very public gyms, and there literally are management related things. Like, for a coach who's just on the floor at where it's somebody else owning that club, interfering in that way can actually cross some pretty thick legal stuff. But I will say that cues such as, how about trying less with this move? Let's have a competition to see who can breathe most slowly the longest. So basically what I'm indicating here is cues of to help not continue to push that person harder and harder, because that is one of the things that the anorexic wants to do. They want to dissolve. They want to disappear. Slowly increasing a body awareness and a body intelligence that brings them inside themselves. So they start to improve what's called interoception or physiological listening, rather than just blasting by pushing harder, you know, with their joints and their muscles to create a sense of feeling or create a blanketing of the deeper feelings. So what I would do with those clients is, I mean, and it's difficult. It's a wrestling match. And I've definitely worked with a lot of people with dysmorphia, all different stages of that spectrum. And of course, I've worked with myself.
Yeah.
And they may not be open to doing less to get more, because they are so fried adrenally that they're actually not going to be getting more results, let alone their nutrition is way off. So I actually teach a 5-day course called the Core Immersion and a 3-day course called the Breath and Bliss Immersion, where both of those trainings, we really take a look at some of the more subtle sensing and, you know, what is it you're pushing away, or what is it you're trying to dissolve, or what is it you're running from? So those are questions that we spool in, you know, sort of implicit into the training work that we do. The mindset is always there. I wish I could give you the right answer, but each person's relationship to that disease of anorexia is such a specific, it depends scenario.
There's a lot of different layers to it. Like the anorexia nervosa, the overtraining. We appreciate the feedback. It's a very important one, and you know, we get a working in gyms, you just kind of you see it.
Yeah.
But I will say this, guys, that the anorexia and bulimia are the top two killers of mental illness for young women. And that's a major liability if someone has a heart attack while you're pushing them to their 30th burpee. So it really is a very serious condition. And I would report that upstream to the management. And if they don't have a way to handle it, they need to, because that is somebody walking on death's door. And it's just terrifying. I have the chills thinking about it. You know, there, I have a great book, a great resource to offer to your listeners, which is my good friend, Dr. Teresa Larson.
Yep.
She wrote a book called Warrior, and she is a recovered bulimic and anorexic. And she worked, she was in the Marines, the U.S. Marines. She served in Iraq, and she actually was part of hostage exchanges. But before she would do anything, she'd be puking in the stall for as long as she could, and she'd go on missions. She writes very candidly about her eating disorder and her path of healing, and also the really ambivalent and quite negative way her superiors handled it when she finally revealed she had this mental illness, because they're not equipped to deal. So it's not just, you know, your gym manager, they may not be equipped to deal. And the U.S. military, not kind at all.
Jill, was, was there someone special in your own inner circle that helped you get over your own diseases?
There was a boyfriend that I had in college that was totally in love with me.
Yeah.
And it actually helped me to see that I was lovable.
Mm.
It wasn't a relationship that lasted, but in a way, his love for me helped me to start a path of self-acceptance. You know, I had seen therapists, and that really wasn't working as well for me as my real life interrelationships. And then along with that, the other thing that worked for me was the gut work practices that I was doing, which was laying my abdomen face down on rolled up towels. And eventually it became this gorgeous ball, this product that I sell and I work with people on all ends of the spectrum, not just people with eating disorders, but people with a disconnect to their body and a disconnect to their breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that worked for me was I went and I lived at this holistic studies institute in upstate New York called the Omega Institute. And I lived in a tent for the summer between age 19. I lived in a tent on the forest floor for an entire summer and did work study. I lived in the community. And now you can go online and you can research earthing, you know, like it's like, oh, you should just get lower to the ground. You should be in nature. You should let the stars and the sun have their way with you, because you're a biological organism. And so this was before like earthing was a thing, and I was sleeping on the ground, and that's part of what healed me.
Can we talk a little bit about, before we start recording, your work you're currently doing with the diaphragm?
Yeah.
And is this something that, is this a course? Is this a passion, a research project? And what's the intent behind that? And how could, you know, the people listening, how could they benefit from your research?
All right. So
loaded.
I mean, thank you for such an open-ended question, Johnny.
You're welcome,
I can
Jill.
Take it any direction there I want go. To. So as I mentioned, part of my healing was laying face down on these objects, like a rolled up towel or a bean bag or anything that would help to bring sense to my gut. Why was I doing this? I did this because I had no feeling in my abdomen from being bulimic. And it was just this really weird, huge black hole in my body. What in yoga tune-up, we call it a body blind spot. But it was more than a blind spot. It was like a pothole, and it had no end. And I confessed it to a yoga teacher when I was in college. And I don't even remember the yoga teacher's name, but she said, hey, lay face down on this little beanbag that looked like a hamburger bun and breathe. And I, you know, very disciplined and obsessive about my workout. So I laid down on that tool and I did start to feel. I started to feel horrible. I started to feel all of the pain and the tension and the misery that I was creating in my gut with throwing up, but also the emotional relationships that were a part of that. So one of the big takeaways for me of that is that, you know, the abdomen has a reciprocal relationship with your respiratory diaphragm. Your breath can only be as grand as the pliability of the abdomen below it permits. The ribs are the house for the diaphragm. The lower six ribs have this amazing dome-shaped muscle, and the diaphragm, which I hope most of your listeners are familiar with, when you breathe in, it descends. It descends downward, and it applies pressure to your gut area. And if your abs are always on, if they're tight, especially that transversus abdominis is, you know, pulled in and holding you, then your diaphragm cannot descend. And if your diaphragm can't move, it's going to keep you in a sympathetically aroused state of being. So using this tool on my abdomen, you know, really showed me how I was like clenching and trying to hold myself together, quite frankly. And that in order to, you know, move past and move through, I had to, you know, I had to let go of all the shit, the garbage, the hell that I wasn't willing to face. So the diaphragm is interconnected to so many structures, not just your transversus abdominis, but the diaphragm, you may or may not know, has fascial bridges that cross over the quadratus lumborum and over the psoas before it attaches to the lumbar spine. So the quadratus lumborum is a very powerful deep low back muscle that links your pelvis to your rib cage. And if you have anything going on in your lower back, chances are the QL is turned on, like excessively excited, and will cause low back pain. The psoas, as you probably know, starts at the inner thigh and links its way almost up to the thoracic spine. And so hip issues and low back issues are always going to be transferring stress to the diaphragm and vice versa. If I'm not a good breather, it's highly likely that my low back and my hips are not optimally centrated. And there may be compressions within there that maybe I don't sense now, but when I go to my chiropractor, like you mentioned, Johnny, or I go to a massage therapist, all of a sudden I start feeling all these weird sort of interrelated twings and tangs and fascial referrals from unknown tensions that I'm walking around with. So the diaphragm can be a real clue into many, many structures. I mean, additionally, your diaphragm connecting to six pairs of ribs, those ribs are connected to your thoracic spine. So if you're trying to create stability for lifts, for pressing, for squatting, for pushing, for rotations, for athletics, you really want to make sure that the relationship between the respiratory diaphragm and the bones of that, you know, that upper torso are well functioning. And again, if they're not functioning well, you're going to have issues uptown of that, the neck, the shoulders, the face, can have chronic headaches, issues with your jaw. And all of these can be actually linked myofascially to the interrelationships of the diaphragm, and not even talking neurologically yet. This is just on a biomechanical level.
Yeah, Jill, I'm sitting here right now and I'm kind of like clenching my abs going a little bit, through it all. In terms of us sitting down or standing up, is there a perfect way in terms of health and gut health for us to be sitting down or standing up?
I mean, all of it's good. I definitely subscribe to the my friend Katie Bowman, who's the creator of Nutritious Movement. She's a real big proponent, an amazing voice for all human beings to move more, move with tons of variability and quite frequently. So I think, you know, you're only as happy as your last breath was. And this is now my ballpark, because I'm a breath obsessed. Your body is really only going to be as balanced as your last breath was. And so the next breath you take is going to be able to impact, you know, change your state, your status. So if you're a short breather, and you're sitting all the time, you're probably going to end up at some point with some low back stuff and some motility issues, neck and shoulder pain. It just kind of comes with the territory. Standing all the time isn't a great option either, just because of the repetition of being a statue. So lay down on your side, roll around, get down on the floor with the kids, and move your breath fully from pelvic floor to throat.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Something that is so important, like breathing, we're really not taught like proper ways. It's something I've always struggled with, breathing, like whether through my nose or through my mouth. And then we get to the gut, and then that has so many different layers. Like we were talking to, are you familiar with Dr. Sean Stevenson?
No, I'm not. I'm sorry.
It's all right. He's from St. Louis, and he has this show called
Model Health.
Yeah, Model Health Show, and it's all about. But we were talking to him, and he was talking about the vagus nerve, and
let's do it.
Yeah, and it's something that Tris and I, well, myself, been reading a lot about, and then especially in regards to the emotional connection of how we feel starting in our gut. And you know, I was raised, and the school of thought was always how you feel definitely didn't originate from the gut, and it's the educated person would tell you differently. Could you educate a little bit about the importance of what the vagus nerve does, and
yes,
and maybe some ways to increase our well-being by being aware of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for leading me to that one too.
So I'm guiding you.
I'm writing a new book right now, and the new book is this interface of breath, vagus, core health, core performance. Mm. I don't have the book cover art yet, so I'm not ready to reveal the title. To reveal the title, but Victory Belt Publishing, who published my book, The Role Model, and also who published my friend Kelly Starrett's book, Becoming a Supple Leopard, they're the publishers, and they're awesome.
Excellent.
So the vagus, what we know now about the vagus is that the vagus has multiple pathways, and based on how creatures appropriated the vagus throughout evolution. Mm. There's a wonderful research scientist named Dr. Stephen Porges who has actually codified the analysis of this, and there's a theory called the polyvagal theory, and he's actually the first guy that ever quantified heart rate variability back in the 80s. He's an amazing, amazingly prolific scientist. But so a lot of my most favorite information on the vagus is from him. So I'll talk about some stuff, and then you can check and find him
can.
That would be amazing.
Definitely.
But the gut is innervated by lots of things, but the vagus nerve is a primary neural tract. And 80% of the fibers in the gut are afferent. They're upwardly flowing. So they're sensory in nature. Your gut is constantly communicating to your brain its status. And if it gets inflamed or unhappy, then your brain will send messages back down to the gut to increase cytokine production and to inflame your gut or to change the way motility is happening. Which will change the way motility is happening. Mm-hmm. But I have an 8.5-month-old son, and so I can tell you firsthand how vast and critical the health of my kid's gut is to his ability to sleep, his ability to cry or not cry, and his ability to irritate his parents to no end. A gassy kid is miserable. A colicky kid is miserable because they're suffering from an explosion of pain in the gut. And that will create a chronic condition of crying, irritability, lack of sleep. Now, fast forward 20, 30 years, you know, just because you have your executive function has come online doesn't mean that the underlying irritation or the underlying nuisance of that isn't impacting you. So it becomes extremely sort of sublimated and submerged. Mm. And because we're like, oh, I got to email this person, that person. But your gut can totally take you down. You know, irritable bowel, especially amongst women, is one of the most debilitating and annoying diseases that we know in the U.S. But I also recently found out that by a scientist named Dr. Michael Gerson, who's kind of like my gut granddaddy. I've never met him, but I love his book, The Second Brain.
Yeah.
He mentioned that in, I believe it's in Filipino culture, that it's the men who suffer more IBS than women. And they were trying to analyze, well, why are women in the U.S. suffering at higher rates of IBS than men in the West? And sorry, than men and why are, it's flipped in the Philippines. It's because in the power structure between male-female in both cultures is reversed. Wow. That women eat their emotions in the U.S. and in the Philippines, men eat their emotions. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought that was maybe that's the answer. But back to the vagus. So the vagus, when things are happening well in your gut, then you are allowed to move freely and operate freely and have the ability to actually relax and downregulate. If there's always irritants in there, you're going to be, your autonomics are going to trip into that sympathetic mode.
Yeah.
We can impact the health of the vagus nerve to help improve the status of your gut's calmness by manually going after some of the vagus's other outputs that are north of the gut. So, namely, what I'm talking about is one is doing breathing practices that extend your exhalation. That will actually help to stimulate a relaxation response in the body that will upregulate the vagus nerve in a positive way. You can also massage certain areas of the lateral neck, certain facial muscles will help to upregulate the vagus nerve. Dr. Porges talks about something called the social engagement system, which is that another way of upregulating the vagus nerve. And that's basically being around other people in a way that makes that uplifts you and makes you happy. And that just seems like so basic. And so like, well, of course. And then he reduces it that, you know, we are creatures that need to be in safe spaces. And if we're not surrounded by cues of safety, then we upregulate our systems of defense, our fight or flight, or even shutdown. Now, shutdown is what happens when your vagus nerve goes completely dominant and you have a pass out response or a death feigning response. The analogy is the mouth and the jaws of the cat. But this can happen if you are struck in a traumatic instance. I mean, we just keep having terrorist attacks happen all over the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, people passing out, not able to escape. This is a vagal response. This is not a fight or flight response.
It's
a
freeze, right?
It's freeze. Yes, it's the ancient shutdown response. North of that, you have the typical sympathetic, like, you know, get me out of here, I can run. But really the first pathway of negotiating your way out of danger is to use your face to actually change your tone of voice, even employ a smile to try to convince or plead in order to get out of harm's way. But I mean, that all sounds really terrifying and maybe stickier than something you guys want to talk about on the vision board. Being feeling safe in the arms of another is the ultimate way to upregulate the vagus nerve. And so the image of the mother with baby in a peaceful situation is really those are the conditions that the vagus needs to operate well so that you don't end up having, you know, chronic bowel issues or chronic inflammation in the gut or different areas of your different spikes of sympathetic activity that can't be quelled by a healthy vagal output. So the vagus brings things back to baseline, brings things back to normal. And this next book that I'm writing are all about novel ways of doing that.
Jill, just sticking on gut health just for a couple more minutes, how much work have you put into the nutrition side of things and how that kind of complements what you're doing as well?
Gosh. So Tristan, this is my favorite question because it can answer it really quickly. I'm not a nutrition expert.
Yeah.
Because of my own eating disordered history, I never, ever want to consult with anybody on what they're eating, on making foods right or wrong. So I just sidestep that. It's Is it important? Of course it's important. But that hasn't been an area of fascination with me. I'm much more interested in the, you know, how can I impact mechanically, neurologically, and with mindset? And then, you know, I listen to Joe. I take his supplements. I love his,
what are you taking?
His gut check,
yeah.
His probiotic is, yeah. I love it so much.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
I love conversations like this because it just made me realize when in the late 90s, I was 14 or 15, and I suffered for a few years. I was a freshman in high school, of chronic stomach pain, to where before a football game and before practices, I would be in my bedroom on my knees,
yes,
in tears. And my I told my coaches, my parents, and my parents thought I was like faking it. So I would go get tested time and time again. And mm-hmm. all they would do would, they would do some screening and they did some blood work. They never found anything. They said it was my nerves. Like that's that's what it was put upon. And I always used to think that was bullshit, but by just saying that was just my nerves, and then having this talk, it just kind of was like one of these aha moments, because I just thought it was my nutrition, you know, eating Hot Pockets in high school sort of thing. But it's interesting how the nervous system could create a very, very physical pain.
Well, think of that as your gut's way of having a migraine. It's exactly what's happening. So, you know, you would never, when someone says that, you know, they're having a blackout migraine and they're seeing the tunnel, you would never think, oh, their nerves are doing that to them. They're just, you know, like you would never think, oh, they're crazy because they're having that. But people, when they have their gut go bazonkers, they take it a little bit more emotionally personally. Like I must, you know, there must be something really, really messed up in my head, but it's not, it's your gut brain that is unable to modulate itself and, you know, dumping out excessive serotonin or whatever other inappropriate cytokine that's an irritant. So no, that's your gut's way of having a migraine. And figuring out how to modulate your relationship to stress, especially anticipatory stress. Like, did you say football?
Yeah. I played football, baseball, and basketball, but when I think back in that time, it was, for some reason, football season always comes to mind.
Well, let's just analyze that for a second. Football is combat.
Yeah.
And so even though you're sympathetic, it's like, like deep within you, deep someplace inside of you might have been in absolute fear of being stifled, being rolled, being injured. That's an appropriate response to walking into combat. In my opinion, you know, it's an appropriate biological response. So, I mean, there are ways to mindset your way out of that stuff. But to me, that was just the little boy inside of you, absolutely in abject fear. And so the biological response is this cascade of neuronal activity that's trying to shut you down. Your body was trying to shut down so you didn't have to confront your opponent on the field. You know, you don't have this in baseball. You don't really have it as much in basketball, but football is a direct combat sport.
Yeah, so I'll tell the listeners what I did, so then you could tell the listeners of what to do, because what I would do is definitely not – I would literally hit myself. I would flex my abs, and just like when it would be at its worst, I would pound my abdominals, like in pain. And then I for some reason thought that that would – and that was my system – which I, you know, definitely not the right system, but for the people listening at home, talk about maybe, you know, some of the breathing techniques or something simple that maybe could help ease the pain a little bit.
Johnny, I am like, we've got to meet when I come down to Australia this year, because I used to hit myself too.
Yeah.
So I'm not laughing.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm laughing out of recognition. Like, it's like the pain is so much. Well, maybe if I hit myself, I'll be able to like sublimate or get out of this sort of internal pain and have this more superficial pain. Do you know what I mean? This is really interesting. So what can people do?
What would you recommend?
One of the things I recommend is getting on the ground. So this is ironic because I lived in a tent, but yes, get down on the ground and start dealing with your breathing apparatus in a very controlled and safe way. So not like literally putting your breath in a petri dish. And the way you put your breath in a petri dish is you can lay down on the gorgeous ball on your gut. Or if you don't have a gorgeous ball, you can get a soft pliable ball, even a Nerf ball is good for this. But you don't want to have something hard because your gut is a pretty delicate area, especially if you've had scar tissue too. You want to be respectful of that.
Yeah.
And do different types of breathing strategies. And this is everything that I taught Jody to do. And I even talked him through this stuff, you know, through emails, and he watched a couple little videos of mine. And this is before we podcast together. He was able to flip his stress switch and be able to sleep again. So you lay down on the gorgeous ball, you close your eyes, and you do a technique called contract relax. Contract relax happens by first playing around with your pneumatics. So you breathe into your gut, you hold your breath, you tighten the abdominals with the held breath, and then you exhale and let go. And the reason for this is you want to employ all of the respiratory muscles, which includes all the layers of the abdomen, and try to turn off their muscle bracing response. Because as soon as nobody in their right mind wants to indent their gut with an object, even if it's a soft thing.
Yeah.
Or like in Johnny's example, like in order to hit yourself, you probably tightened right before you struck your belly, right?
That's right.
So, but what it does is that reduces the natural muscle bracing that happens to the human body when it's being poked or prodded. And so this is you doing that. It's not a therapist. So you're working on a central nervous system response, basically, of turning off your tendency to brace. And finally figuring or feeling for your quote-unquote normal resting tone. And so this will permit the respiratory diaphragm to also be more fully mobilized. So that's one. Two, doing things that then massage the ball around the tapestry of the entire gut region. And so that would be all of the available soft tissue space on the front, your side waist, your low back, playing around in the field of the thoracolumbar fascia, which is a grand fascial plane that connects all of your back musculature, basically.
Yeah.
And then you would move north. You'd move to the rib cage and do similar things. So these things will upregulate your relaxation response. They excite your vagus nerve in a positive way. And it will also put you in touch with where you are and aren't breathing. So it'll put you in touch with where the limits of range of motion are in the distension process and the reflexive stretch of the intercostals, as well as the multiple layers of the abdomen. And then there's more. I mean, this is just like, what can you do? It's really easy to roll, to do these slow motion, rolling motions on the trunk with the gorgeous ball. And there's lots of more specific things you can do with little tiny balls and the other role model balls. But I'm such an advocate for this, and I've seen such huge change. And one of the checks that we do with this is we'll have our athletes check into their overhead position before they do the gut work.
Yeah.
And then after they do the gut work, all of a sudden the overhead range of motion not only improves like crazy, but there's no more pain at end range. Their elbow, which couldn't straighten before, all of a sudden is straightening, meaning their bicep for whatever reason is just chronically inhibited for whatever. So there's so many different neural changes that happen just by doing a breath practice like this.
Yeah. Jill, is there a recommended amount of time that you spend in each area?
Oh, God. Whatever.
Whatever. Because I heard you say that you don't want to overdo it. So was there like 5 minutes that you would spend max on each before moving to the next? Or is there a way you might hurt yourself by doing too much?
So if you ask, if I'm looking at like the fascia research, they say that like there's an agreement around the 60-second to 2-minute mark is about all you need to actually make change in the textures of the fascia. Nerves work a little much more quickly than that, but you want to have a collaboration between your myofascial structures and your nervous system. So in any given point, like if I'm just doing a point, then I might stay there for up to 2 minutes.
Okay.
If I'm doing a region, that time threshold is going to be much greater. When you think about the abdomen, there's a lot of available tissue to contact. So, you know, you could do 5 minutes on the gut and it would make a huge difference.
Jill, sorry about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to reach out for your advice because you just became my therapist as well. So recently I reached out and hired a yoga teacher to teach me. She's also a coach to do one-on-ones because I'm just really interested in learning the language of yoga. Like I've done it before in group classes the last few years, but I just feel like I'm going, no pun intended, going through the motions. Like I want to understand the language of it. And use it as a tool as I go through, you know, life. And what sort of questions should I be asking? What should I be looking for? And you know, what should I be expecting? So I do powerlifting, played sports. I'm 35. It's just one of these things that I'm really into, want to get into. And just you being an expert in that field, what sort of questions should I be asking?
Well, good for you. That's great diversity. You know, I can't speak to all yoga because each yoga teacher, I think, is going to have a unique spin on what it is they teach. You know, I created Yoga Tune-Up because I had this experience that so much of the yoga training or classes I was taking, they were really ignoring what I thought. They were perpetuating a lot of myth about the body and not coming from a sound biomechanical place. So I had to take a big step back and start breaking apart asana and disassembling the poses to help my students reassemble the poses so that they resembled human beings and weren't trying to force themselves into shapes that were actually breaking them down. So I have a bias about yogas in general, and I think it really is about the teacher. So the teacher hopefully has a strong A&P background. And the teacher has a strong, a strong interest in the interplay of breath and breath dynamics with movement. There should be a sense of play in the way this teacher approaches the work, that it's not always the same thing every single time, because the human body is different hour by hour and day by day, and your needs for your lesson are going to be different. So the teacher should have a sense of play. They should be invested in you improving your biomechanics within that art form of yoga, right? Whichever art form of yoga they're coming from, whichever lineage. And they should also have very good cueing to keep you inside of your mind and body. So you may joke about this or that on occasion, but when you're doing a practice like yoga or tai chi or qigong, there should be a very, very concentrated internal focus that is and part of that is the spooling of the parasympathetics, this incredible upregulation of the vagus and the other faculties of the relaxation response, improving your ability to concentrate. And by the way, all of this translates into powerlifting and work. I mean, I work with a strength and conditioning coach, and I'm really good at body mapping myself and good at building myself. Good at bodybuilding myself? I'm good at it. I'm good at the art of it.
So like the awareness,
I know how to organize my body. Because I have moved my mind through every tissue of my body in super slow motion for so long that I know how to add things up. So, you know, throwing massive doses of body awareness your way should be the other thing that that person does that yoga teacher does. Yeah. I mean, this is like an endless conversation.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go. You gave me some awesome feedback, A&P background, breath dynamics, sense of play. Thank you. I'm going to hold her accountable.
Okay. Yeah, good. Jill. Sense of play, but that also keeps you inside of your awareness sphere that you're not, you know.
Got it.
Just telling Jim Carrey jokes the whole time.
Jill, you briefly touched on some of the great results that Joe DeFranco had. Last year, he went to your 3-day workshop. I was just really intrigued of what happens in this? And for people that are listening now and might be interested in taking that workshop, what exactly do you do in these 3 days?
So Joe came to my breath and bliss immersion in New York City. I just finished teaching one last weekend here as well. Myself and a handful of my yoga tune-up trainers teach this module worldwide. Actually, the next one is in the UK. No, the next one is in Wisconsin in June. And then we also have one in the UK in July and one in Toronto in June. It is a very deep dive into novel ways of stimulating the parasympathetics. So a lot of what I've been describing, so there are breathing strategies galore, movement strategies galore, positional awareness that help to improve your endurance for being in a parasympathetic state. For example, when you think about training, you know, people train to run 26.2 miles for a marathon. Like, actually, it's kind of an insane proposition. But people don't typically train to relax for 2.5 hours straight, and or let's say 26.2 miles in the parasympathetic space, right? So every day we spend about 6 hours doing practices that help to stimulate those faculties of human nature, and then guide the teacher, educator in ways of coming up with these activities to do in the context of coaching in a gym or a yoga studio or Pilates or corporate wellness, corporate health on the field with athletes. And so we get a really wide variety, or in the clinic with your, you know, with your patients, get a wide variety of people who are seeking to not just do a meditation retreat, but they actually want to move and learn some of these novel things that you can do with the balls and lots of other stuff. I hope that answers your question. But yeah, Joe did it, and he went home after the first night, and he slept for 9 hours straight.
Wow.
And then he sleeps 3 hours. About it. Yeah. He's been a chronic insomniac for the past 5 or maybe even longer, at least 5 years, if not longer. And he's not slept more than 4 hours in a single night. And he slept 9 hours solid after he hit the pillow, and he couldn't believe it. And there were no drugs involved. This is, again, this is breath, body position, correct palpation, you know, using the role model balls and mindset strategies that did this.
Wow. And you said you're going to be coming to Australia?
Yeah. So I'm coming to Australia as part of Phylex next April.
Awesome.
So I think that's the second week or third week of April, and I'll be teaching both of my role model courses when I'm down there. And I'll be teaching team teaching something with my friend Mike Fitch, who's the creator of Animal Flow. And I'll definitely do a diaphragm based workshop for sure, because that's my jam.
Yeah, that's my jam.
I think you can book Johnny and myself.
Yeah, for sure. Keep us posted on that.
Well, let's see, where is that? Is that in Sydney?
It is in Sydney. It will be down because we've got a new convention center, and it's beautiful. Yeah. So I think you really, really enjoy it. It's down at Darling Harbour, which is right on the water in the city.
It's gorgeous. Have you been to Sydney before?
No, I was supposed to be there year before last, but I had a medical emergency and I wasn't able to get on the plane. So I was supposed to present at a conference, and it was just sort of a tragedy that happened, and I wasn't able to come. But I've been looking forward to coming down there. We have some yoga tune-up teachers in the Melbourne area and also in Perth. You can find them on our website. We have about 500 teachers worldwide, and we have a small handful throughout Australia. And so I'm really looking forward to finally getting to work with the team down there instead of them having to fly over here.
Excellent.
Yeah. Jill, we really appreciate your time today. Before I let you leave, I want everyone following Jill online. You can find her at www.tuneupfitness.com or also www.theroledmodel.com. On Facebook, I just want to confirm this with you, you're Jill Miller Faust, F-A-U-S-T.
Yeah, you can just find us at Tune Up Fitness on Facebook. That's my author page.
Okay.
Jill Miller Faust, actually.
Faust. My apologies.
My name.
So Australian of me. And Instagram, I find you at Yoga Tune Up.
Yoga tune-up. Yeah, like you tune up a car, tune up yoga. Yep, I love Instagram. So yeah, totally. Hang out with me there.
You've been very educational. I'm looking at Johnny, and you have opened his eyes, I think, to many, many, and myself, but especially him. I can see it on his face. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, Jill, thanks for coming on. We got to do this again. Keep us posted, and thanks for sharing the space, man. It was very educational, and you gave us a lot, so we appreciate you.
I certainly appreciate it, and I want to just big shout out to Joe D for hooking us up, for connecting us. So thank you so much.
Yeah, Joe D, he'll be listening.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jill.
Bye, guys.
Johnny, that was the incredible Jill Miller. You connected, like.
Yeah, I felt like I was talking to my therapist. It's interesting. Like, we do these a lot, Tristan, and usually we'll have these, like, hindsight 2020 moments when we're walking away from the podcast studio, not really in the interview, but when she was talking about, you know, sharing the stories about pain, and it just, you know, it just hit me. I was like, shit, man, I forgot that I used to live with pain a lot. And then the memories just came back. It was almost like, you know, a Freudian slip in terms of we suppress these things. It was horrible, man. I remember like it was yesterday, like hitting myself and going to the doctors and doing scans, and my parents thinking that
frustrating.
They thought that I was lying. Like my parents thought I was like lying or making things up.
Scans just come up with nothing.
Nothing.
But you can feel something's wrong.
Yeah, you could feel, and it's really immobilizing, and it affects everything, your emotions, your creativity, everything. I was a really, really angry kid.
Yeah.
And you know,
it can be from pain, man.
Yeah. Sure. Right. And then like having this chat with her, I'm like, shit, you don't need, you could be in pain without anything coming up on a scan.
Yeah.
I was always on the impression that we have to see to believe, but you don't, you know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting, but it was cool to kind of, I wasn't expecting to tell that story.
Well, it's good. You finally got a little bit of closure in terms of, I think you owe her probably $500.
Yes. She's going to send me an invoice. And because I'm an Australian resident now, I'm just going to choose to decline. Joe, if you're listening, I'll pay you.
Please, send him an invoice.
She's excited.
No, it was good. Jesus. I think a lot of people will get, I'm sure there's other people that probably have similarities to issues that you went through.
So yeah.
It's probably good that you actually did bring it up, because that's the main thing. Like, I know how many people there are in the world. Like, I'm sure there's
7 billion.
Yeah, going through the exact same issues that you did. So it might just kind of help them see the first step in trying to help, and maybe they can maybe purchase one of Jill's balls,
yeah,
or start following Jill a little bit more closely, buy one of her books.
Yeah.
And who knows, the pain might go away, because that's, we want kind of actually a really good life, don't we?
Yeah, you want vitality.
Yeah.
You want to feel great. You want to be optimized, and pain doesn't fall into that equation, man. And sadly to say, a lot of us have it.
Yeah. So
anything works, right? Any advice could work.
For sure. So if that's you, I think the best way you can do it is just do a little bit more research, check out some of the more stuff that Jill's doing, look at her website, and who knows, you might get a few ideas just as Johnny has in terms of kind of fixing some of the problems that he used to have.
I think mine was nutrition, man. My nutrition was shit. I didn't eat a real vegetable until I think I was 25.
They set you up though in America for that.
Dude, I ate Hot Pockets and pizza rolls for like 7 years.
Well, it's cheaper for you to eat.
Dad bod was popping.
Eat good, right?
Yeah, for sure, man. Like, I've played 3 sports year round from the time I was 7 until
lucky
I was 18.
You would have been a monster. Oh,
dad bod popping, boy. That fatty was out.
Remember when you were younger? It's like, there's no abs. You just got a little pot belly.
Dude, I didn't get abs. This is real rap. I just turned 35. I didn't get abs until I was 32.
That's actually an interesting thing. Maybe we should get like a doctor on here.
Yeah.
Who can tell us why. You know how kids always have like a pot belly?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know, man. They have to represent that dad bod. Like, yeah, that Roy Nelson. Like that kids. Roy Nelson body.
Yeah, dad bod for kids.
Yeah.
With no hair.
It's just inflammation, like, man. I think it's inflammation.
Yeah, it's the body's the first time they're like kind of taking in food, so they get inflamed, right?
I don't know if it's that, but I know our parents weren't set up with, you know, nutrition keeps evolving, and what we know now compared to 5 years ago, let alone 25 years ago, dude, I ate popsicles for dinner before. I would eat the fucking freezer pops.
Jesus.
And then, like, what's the worst? Bologna with ketchup would be a meal for me.
Wow.
Oh, dude, it was bad.
Jesus, mate.
Dad bod popping.
Dad bod for sure. Guys, we really hope you enjoyed the show. it's been very educational. So I think the best thing you do is to share it with your family and friends via your social medias. Tag me and Johnny on it. Johnny, sure. You can tag him at.
Yeah, Johnny Stofko, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, new YouTube channel. You'll see me coaching Johnny Stofko. Subscribe.
Cool. I'm at Tristan Cannell Fitness or Tristan Cannell. And you can tag the Vision Board at Vision Board Pod. So guys, get in touch. And any guest requests or feedback on the show, we'd love to hear it. So like I said, social media, email, please get in touch. We would love to hear from you.
Stay connected.
All right, guys. Next on the show, we got Jonathan Fields. He's a very kind of, what's the word for it? Thought-provoking.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Kind.
He's not going to be your general.
Grounding.
This is not going to be one of the last five episodes. We've been having some absolute killers in terms of like training.
Energy and stuff like that.
This is not kind of Jonathan's Fields. He's more kind of like the mental sort of, he's not a yogi.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, right? I don't want to put him.
Describe him.
I don't want to put Jonathan, you know, under any box.
He, is that a word?
I think Jonathan is very like kind in his in calm spirited,
yeah.
And very logical, and he wants everybody to be the best versions of themselves.
Yeah. And actually, I've got a way you can describe it. If you're looking to increase your bench press, this is not an episode for you.
There you go.
But if you want to know how you can increase your mental game in terms of bringing your best A game every day, I think this is an episode for you.
Yeah, man. He's just sprinkling just positive vibes all throughout, and it's a very important message. So Jonathan Fields is a guy that we've been waiting to bring on, so we're stoked.
Hell yeah. So, guys, check it out. Remember, subscribe, share it with your friends, and we'll keep bringing some great shows.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.